Well, I'd like to begin by saying welcome to all of our churches as well as all of you who are joining us online today. We're continuing our series, My Bad Church Experience, with part 37 of a series that seems to have so much material that there's no end in sight. We may go on forever with this series. Before we get into something too serious, I just want to ask for a little bit of latitude because recently I came upon something that I think will help us get to our bad church experience du jour. And this thing that I stumbled upon was a social media trend. And some of you may have seen this. I admittedly was a little late to this one, which pains me to admit because I feel like I'm a kind of a hipster and try to keep up on trends. But the reality was I was a little late in this one, and a friend of mine from Buckhead actually turned me on to this incredibly fascinating trend on social media. Over the last year, if you haven't seen this, there was a new trend that has developed called dog shaming. Have you seen this? I would ask you to raise your hands, but nobody's going to admit this in church. Evidently, what happens is that people decide to take pictures of their dogs and shame them online. Now, here's the thing. You think I'm making this up, but there's actually, we can go to Wikipedia. There's actually a definition for this. And here's the definition. Dog shaming is the online practice where an image of a dog is uploaded to the internet with a sign which describes some recent negative behavior perpetuated by the animal. So basically what happens is you catch your dog doing something bad or bizarre. You come up with some creative, witty sign, snap a picture next to the dog, and then you upload their mutt shot, see what I did there, to the World Wide Web to shame them for eternity, okay? Now, some of you, here's the deal. I know some of you don't believe this exists, but if you were to go to www.dogshaming.com, you could spend endless hours like I have sifting through some of these pictures. Now, knowing that some of you will not be able to resist the incredible force of this amazing and fascinating trend, I figured I would rescue you from your phones right now as you begin to look it up and show you a few examples, just to rescue you, a few of you. So here's one of my favorites. Here's the first one. It's this dog that apparently looks really caught. There was some shaming that went on before this picture. And it says, I took 4 sticks of butter from a grocery bag, ate 2, smeared the 3rd in the couch. Mom's still searching for the 4th. Here's another one. Look at that face, by the way. 0 days since I decided to hunt for bacon in the wall. This guy doesn't care at all, does he? And by the way, how in the world did the owner not acknowledge all the slobber on the wall in their sign? I mean, that's disgusting. And then this is just one last one. This is my personal favorite. Yep, I pooped in the AC vent. Now the entire house smells. That's what you get for leaving the cover off the vent. The dog shaming sign should have been of the owner. But the reality is it isn't just dogs that can be caught online, is it? It's not just dogs that are subject to online shaming. This happens all the time to people through Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. Some of you have seen this regularly. In fact, some of you have participated in it. Some of you have been the subject of somebody's exposure, being caught online doing something silly or bizarre or bad. Recently, I was on a golf trip with some guys that we go with annually, and we were playing golf. And on our first day of golf, it's a 3-day golf trip. On our first day of golf, I was playing in a group with a foursome with one of the guys in my small group, who, by the way, happens to be a fantastic golfer, shoots in the 70s regularly. But everybody hits a few bad shots sometimes. And we were on hole number 4 of 90 holes for 3 days, hole number 4, and it's a par 5. And after crushing his drive down the right center of the fairway, I mean just absolutely crushing his drive down the right center of the fairway, he gets up to his ball, tops his 2nd, and duffs his 3rd. And before hitting his 4th, he apparently felt the need to test the strength of his club against the ground and snapped it in half. And this is on hole 4. Did I say that? Hole 4 of 90. He snapped his club in half, and I was kind of plotting all the rest of the round. And when we got to the end of the round, I just waited for the right moment. I had my phone out. And as he pulled the club out of the back of the cart, I quickly snapped a picture and immediately did the same thing you would do. I uploaded it to Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram so all of our friends could enjoy the picture. And I wouldn't dare show that in a crowd this large. Oh, yes, I would. So here he is in all his glory with his snap club in half. And lest you think this was an isolated incident, the year before it was his pitching wedge that went swimming in the lake. Now, before you begin to judge me and think I'm a terrible friend, I just need to let you know 2 things. 1, I had full permission to show that picture today. And the 2nd thing is, I know something about you. And it's the same thing that's true of me, is that we love to catch. We love the thrill of the catch. We love to catch people, to catch things. And whether we're talking about sales, whether we're talking about fishing, whether we're talking about dating, or whether we're talking about people behaving badly, we love the thrill of the catch. It's something we love. It's why tabloids exist. It's why TMZ exists. It's why some of us are consumed when Dateline NBC with Chris Hansen comes on for hours on end in the evening watching people get caught over and over and over. We love the thrill of the catch. But the reality is that thing that's in us in the anonymous dog shaming, the thing that's in us that posts pictures catching people online on social media is an indication of a human tendency. It's the human nature in us that loves to catch. And it's one thing when we're talking about dogs messing up their owners' houses or when we're talking about a golfer messing up his golf game. But it's something totally different. It's taken to a totally different level when we're talking about people messing up in life. In fact, it goes to a totally different level when we're talking about people not only messing up in life, but messing up their lives, messing up the lives of people around them. In fact, the human tendency to catch those people and expose those people in ways that are unhealthy is what led to some of your really bad church experience. And this is nothing new, because as we said a moment ago, this is not a church tendency. This is a human tendency. And some of you had a bad church experience because of the way somebody was caught. It wasn't that they were caught. It's how they were caught in church or by church people. But this is nothing new. This existed in some of the very first churches. In fact, Paul, the Apostle Paul, who wrote and established and wrote to many of these new churches, he addressed this in several different of his letters. But in one of his letters, he specifically talked about what to do when you catch people. And in this letter, he apparently had caught these people with some bad church experiences. There were people in Galatia who were experiencing some things that were really beginning to turn them off from his message. And it's not at all what he intended when he initially established those churches. And before Paul talks about the things we're going to look in the verses today, he sets this all up by talking about how they're to live. You see, there was a group of people who were doing the catching. And there was a group of people who were causing these people to live by the law. And Paul introduces a new paradigm. And he says that they're to live by the Spirit, not by the law. And then he contrasts living by the Spirit with living by the flesh, or living God's way with living according to our human nature. And then, in the verses we're about to look at, Paul directly addresses, what do you do when people who have calling themselves Jesus followers don't live by the Spirit? They don't live God's way. And this is what he says. He says, brothers and sisters, that is, those of you who are Christians, if someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should. Now, I'm going to pause here, because there was something in the Galatians. There was something in the people, the leaders who rolled out these words, that got these words out for the very first time. There was something in them that's the same thing that's in us that initially caused them to begin to wring their hands and go, okay, now we're getting somewhere. This is it. They'd been waiting all the letters, all of these words, and in the very last chapter, Paul starts and he says, if someone's caught in a sin, you people who are living by the Spirit, you good people, this is what you should do. And I think some of them were sitting there going, okay, tell us, what do we get to do to the guy who's been getting away with the sinful behavior that we secretly wish we could be doing? What do we get to do to him, Paul? Tell us. And the reality is that's the exact same mentality that led to some of our bad church experience. As we said a moment ago, it's not that someone was caught. It's how they were caught. The reality is it began because somebody messed up. It's usually something that's done in secret. It was a single act. It was an oops. And after it happened once in secret, it didn't seem to hurt anybody, or nobody even really seemed to notice. That oops became habit. It turned into an addiction or an affair, a whole set of unethical business practices, maybe a double life. And the reality was what happened once that became a pattern is now something that had to be kept in secret. And the reality was we didn't want to get caught, or that person did not want to get caught. And as the behavior continued, what happened is those internal things, those personal things began to move outward, and the consequences began to become public. And these things were no longer able to be hidden. And then it happened. They were caught. You were caught. Somebody was caught. And they were caught by church people who, other than the people who were directly affected by the behavior, seemed to be the only people who really cared about what was going on. And they didn't care in the way we wish they would have cared. They cared about the behavior, but they didn't necessarily care for the individual. They didn't necessarily care for you. They didn't necessarily care for us. They cared, but they cared only about the behavior, and they cared about exposing the behavior and making that behavior right. And the reality is that turned many of us off to church. In fact, it turned some of you off to God. For some of you, you were caught. And you were caught in a situation, and maybe it wasn't super public, and maybe it wasn't in front of the church, but it was amongst a bunch of church people. And when you were caught, it completely turned you off, and maybe in some circumstances, they asked you to leave. And in other circumstances, they just made you want to leave. And you didn't want to be a part of what was going on. For others of you, you watched somebody else. It wasn't you. You watched somebody close to you, somebody you loved, maybe one of your parents, maybe one of your children, maybe one of your friends. You watched them, and you watched in horror. You couldn't do anything, but you watched them be exposed, be caught in a way that was completely unhealthy in the church. And that's what was going on in this situation in Corinth. That's what was happening in this unrest. And those types of things, those types of situations cause really bad experiences for people in church. When I was in graduate school, I went to a church at the suggestion of a friend. A friend of mine thought, I really liked the progressive church movement, and this was back when there wasn't really like contemporary churches yet. There was just contemporary services. There was like the contemporary service or the traditional service. Which service do you go to? Do you go to the traditional service or do you go to the contemporary service? That determined what type of person you were. Well, I liked the contemporary service. And the church that I was suggested to go to didn't have a contemporary service, and this guy thought, you know what, this would be really good. And when I got there, it wasn't really me, but I was kind of struck. There was a lot of liturgy, and there was a lot of symbolism. And there was a lot of things that happened in the church that were powerful. And we stood, and we sat, and we kneeled. And we did some different things. And near the end of the service, after we had gone through a lot of the liturgy, after prayers were read, after the sermon was read, we got to the end, and the pastor of the church walked to the front of the church, and he said, now before we finish today, there's one more item of business we have to handle before we finish the church. And he said, and this has to do with church discipline. And I began to sweat. I was like, oh my goodness, what is going to go on? And again, this was a little church. I mean, we're talking about 100 or so people, you know, maybe 120 people in the building. But I was nervous. I didn't know what was about to happen. I'd never been in a setting like this. I'd never seen something like this happen. And he proceeded to ask a guy in about the eighth row to stand up. And he began to call out this guy about an extramarital affair with his wife and what seemed like one of his kids crying in the pew next to him. He read a verse and he talked about what specifically that verse meant and why he was justified in doing what he was doing. And then he prayed for the guy. And at the end of his prayer, with a smile on his face, he said, well, thanks for coming today. I'll see you next week. And I thought, no, you will not. I won't be here. I don't think that guy will be here. I don't think half the people in here are going to be here because nobody wants to be caught that way. The reality is people are caught, but nobody wants to be caught that way. Nobody wants to be caught in that manner. That there was nothing about that that was attractive. And the reality is most of us think that Paul ends this statement. It would seem logical that he would end this statement by saying that if someone is caught in a sin, you should expose that person publicly because that's what we experienced. That's what some of us saw. Or others of us think that we should rebuke that person quickly. We think that's what it must have said. Because nobody bothered to listen to our situation. They didn't bother to hear where we were coming from or what we were in the middle of. They just began to tell us what the truth was and what we were doing wrong and what we were supposed to do right. And they began to rebuke us quickly before they even understood what the circumstances were. And for others of us, our experience was that we were condemned. And we thought Paul must have said that they should condemn people harshly because that's what we saw. That's what some of you experienced. That was your bad church experience. You felt condemned. You felt given up on. And it was harsh. It was difficult. People wrote you off. And you were in a situation with a terrible church experience. Now, the reality is some of you know that's not what Paul wrote. That's not what he said. But that's what we got from church. That was our experience with the church. And it had a lasting impression on us. And it turned some of us off to church. And more of us off to God for a really long time. And some of you might be back. You might have come back recently. And the reality is we've got to get this thing right. And Paul knew that the church in Galatia needed to get this right. So he made it really clear. He cut right to it. And he said this. But one of the things you need to know is he said, brothers and sisters, if someone's caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit. You see, he makes a distinction here. He draws to a specific audience. And he said, now there's a posture in which you need to approach this. And the posture is one who's led by the Spirit. It's not the knee-jerk reaction of our human nature to want to catch people. That thrill of the catch thing inside of us that wants to expose. He said, don't lean into that. That's of the nature of the flesh. But those of you who are led by the Spirit, this is what you should do. You should restore that person gently. Now, this is huge. This is not at all what they expected. This is not what the Galatians were thinking Paul is going to say. In fact, I think of those that were thrilled, that loved the thrill of the catch, were not thrilled by Paul's instruction. But it changed the paradigm. It changed what was supposed to happen. As opposed to catching people and setting things right, Paul said, no, what I want you to do is I want you to restore people gently. This is huge. This completely changes our perspective. Recently, my wife and I were out looking for houses. And we were looking over in the Milton area, and we were driving around looking at some different houses, thinking we might want to move at some point. And we were just driving around casually looking, and we had, you know, some of you use things like Zillow. We were using an online tool, and we found a piece of property that was for sale. And we drove onto the piece of property, a beautiful piece of property, and there was an old abandoned house on that piece of property. It looked like this. It looks sort of like this. It wasn't exactly like this, but it looked sort of like this. In fact, it might have even been a little more run down than this house. But it looked sort of like this house. And when we pulled right up to it, we pulled right up to the side of the house, my wife said, I think this has potential. And I said, okay, which part? And she said, all of it. I think it has potential. I said, I think if we were to buy this, we would immediately bulldoze this house and start over. I mean, it's a great piece of property, but there is nothing worth saving in that. And the reality is that's the mentality that mowed down some of our friends. Some of our family members, people we love, maybe you. That's the mentality oftentimes is taken in church. And Paul says, here's the thing. Here's what you need to know. Those of you who are going to be led by the Spirit, when you encounter something that looks like this, you're to gently go about the business of doing this. You're to restore what looks like should be condemned. It would be so much easier to condemn, but you're to go about the business of restoration. That's what we're called to be a part of. And Paul wanted to make it clear that we're not to be about condemnation. There is no more condemnation. We're to be about the process of restoration, because those who are led by the Spirit, those who are led by the message and the power of Jesus, are to be about the business of restoration. There is a powerful difference between condemnation and restoration. Condemning is easy. Restoring is difficult. Condemning is simple. Restoring is complex. Condemning is destructive. Restoring is constructive. And the reality is when people are condemned, they feel like people have turned their back on them. They're given up on. We basically communicate, there's no value in you, or at least we don't see enough value to leverage our resources, our time and our efforts to restore, to bring back, to rescue. The reality is restoration is just the opposite. Restoration says, I'm going to take careful notice. I'm going to get into the mess. I'm going to discover what needs to stay and what needs to go. I'm going to get involved and be a part of the process of restoring what's been broken, of restoring what's been torn down. There's a powerful difference between the two, and the same is true with people. You see, when we approach people in life and they feel condemned, that has a powerful impact on their life. And when people feel restored, when they feel like somebody's going to get their hands dirty and get involved in the process of restoration, that provides something totally different. Here's my question for you. When you think of the church, do you think restoring or condemning? When you think of church people, when you think of Christians, do you think restorers or condemners? When you think of the type of community you want to be a part of, do you think condemnation or restoration? You see, there's something powerful about the difference between these two things. There's something powerful between approaching a situation like this and deciding we're going to level it and condemn it, and a situation where we're going to restore. And what happens too often as a church is people get a sticker slapped on them that says condemned. But what if we were to change our perspective? What if we were to be about the business of restoration? You see, this idea, this change in perspective is a game changer. It's a word changer. In fact, this image of restoration versus condemnation completely redefines the way we catch. Let's go back to our verse for a second. The verse said, brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, you see, this word caught is an important word, but it's also a funny word. It's a word that can have two totally different meanings. You see, the reality is this word is a lot like the word jam, which is great if you're at grandma's house and it's fresh. It's not great if you're late for a meeting and on Georgia 400. The reality is it's like the word bill, which is awesome if Ben Franklin's picture's on it and you're getting it in a birthday card. It's terrible if you live in the South and you're getting your July statement from Georgia Power. It's also like the word fixed, which is awesome when you get your laptop back and the sticky note says that on it from the IT guy. But it invokes an entirely different emotion if you're a dog or a cat. And the reality is, it took a couple of you to catch that one. Speaking of catch, the word caught's the same way. You see, the word caught can have a positive or negative connotation depending on how it's used. The reality is depending on the context, caught can have two very different meanings. Think about it in terms of a net. You see, you can be caught in a net, or you can be caught by a net. You can be caught in a net. You can be caught in a net, or you can be caught by a net. You can be caught harshly, ensnared, tangled, tortured in a net, or you can be caught. You can be saved. You can be rescued. You can be like a fish tangled up in a net, or you can be like a trapeze artist safely caught when you make a mistake, when you stumble and you fall. And the difference between the two is massive. This is what I think Paul had in mind. This is what Paul was talking about, is that the church should be the place where people are not caught and ensnared. They're not caught by a net. They're caught in a net. Let me ask you this question. How do you want to be caught? But what if we were to catch the way we want to be caught? What if this community, what if this church was known as a place that when people stumble and fall, they were caught in that way? What if they were caught and carried? You see, this is what I think Paul had in mind. And the reason I know this is what Paul had in mind is because he knew people were stumbling and falling. And he knew people were going to land somewhere. And he knew if they were going to land in the community of faith, he wanted them to land in a place where they would be caught and carried. In fact, in the very next verse, he goes on and he says this. Paul says, carry each other's burdens. And in this way, you will fulfill the law of Christ. Carry each other's burdens. You see, we're to catch and carry. When you catch like this, you can't carry. When you catch like this, you can carry the burdens of other people. Paul was talking about getting involved, standing shoulder to shoulder, bearing the weight of the consequences with other people, getting into the middle of the mess and dealing with the consequences of people's actions, their behavior with them, carrying them through the mess and the difficulty of their behavior. I think that's what Paul had in mind. And he said, and in this way, you fulfill the law of Christ. The law of Christ, when it was all boiled down, Jesus said the whole law can be summed up in this. Love God and love others. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love others as yourself. And when we catch and carry, we fulfill what Jesus had in mind for people in the church when they stumbled and falled. You see, we got to get this right. Great churches catch the fallen and carry the burdened. Some of us have had a bad church experience, but great churches catch the burden, catch the fallen and carry the burden. And this is what Paul had in mind when he was writing this. So here's the challenge. See, some of us need to work on our catching. We need to work on our catching skills. We need to become better carriers. We need to become less condemning and more restoring. We need to do that within our small groups, within our volunteer teams, with our friends, our family members, and our neighbors. We need to think first restoration, not condemnation, and get involved and catch and carry other people. And there's some of us who are here today, maybe you've been burned in the past, and you need to step out. You've been in the shadows too long, and you need to be carried. You need to be willing to step out and allow the Spirit-led Christians around you to trust them, to carry you, to catch and carry you in the midst of what you're facing. And in doing so, God will bring about the restoration he wants to bring about in your life and maybe rescue you from an even greater mess that's in your future should you continue down the path that you're on. You see the massive difference? If we're the type of church that catches and carries, people will land here. If we're known for catching in this way, we will have lots of opportunities to catch. And then we're commanded by the Apostle Paul to carry people, which is a much better way. So here's my question. My question is this. How will we catch? What type of church will we be? Will we catch and carry? Or will we catch and condemn? You see, this won't only be determined by the group of people that stand up here. It's not just determined by the paid staff of this church. The way people are caught in this church will be defined in each moment that any one of us encounters someone who stumbles and falls. That's how this will be defined in this church. How people are caught when they stumble and fall. What it feels like. The church experience of those who stumble and fall, whether they're people who are in this church or people outside of this church, when they land here, their church experience will be determined by how you and I choose to catch. The truth is we can catch and we can ensnare harshly. Or we can catch gently and we can carry. So what is it? Will we catch and condemn? Will we catch and carry? You see, we have to get this right. Our mission depends on this. Not only does our mission depend on this, but we will be so much better if we're a community that thinks restoration, not condemnation. If we're a community that's willing to reach out and catch the people who are stumbling and falling, isn't that the type of community that all of us want to be a part of? You see, every single one of us has a choice when somebody stumbles and falls. We can catch or we can catch. And my prayer is that in that moment, regardless of what's stirring inside of us, regardless of what human nature is wanting to do, that we would be a church who is led by the Spirit as Paul called us to be. And that we would deny what seems natural. We would deny that knee-jerk reaction and that we would catch and carry the fallen. Let me pray for us. God, I pray today that you would help us get this one right. God, I pray for somebody who's here today who was caught. They've come back today, and this was their first and maybe only shot they were going to give the church again. I pray that somehow they would bump into somebody in this room, in one of the rooms that's watching today. And that they would feel caught and carried. They'd be met with an attitude of restoration, not condemnation. They'd be met by some people who are truly trying to be led by the Spirit, trying to do things your way. And then in that encounter, they would have a great church experience as they're caught and they're carried in the midst of the circumstances that they're in. God, I just pray for our leaders. I pray for those people who lead our volunteer teams, for people who lead our small groups. I pray for our staff. I pray for anybody who represents this church, inside or outside of this building. God, I pray that you would help us, that you would empower us to rise above what stirs inside of us and help us to catch and carry the fallen. Help us to think restoration, not condemnation. We know that we can only do that by the power of your Spirit. That's why you wanted us to follow your Spirit and be led by your Spirit. And so we're going to trust you. We're going to ask you to empower us to be that type of church so that we would create a great church experience for those who stumble and fall and land in our community. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.